The 2006 International AIDS Conference, Time to Deliver, brought to you by KaiserNetwork.org.
I'm the co-chair of the conference, and I'm pleased to have with me today two speakers from our late breaker sessions that were presented this afternoon. Some of the late breakers are still taking place, so we'll be having two press conferences or briefings this afternoon. This is the first, and features presentations from Tracks A&E, and the other at 4 p.m. will feature presentations from BC&D. So I will ask each of the presenters to give a quick summary of their presentation, and then we'll have questions. So our first speaker to this afternoon is Dr. Agneta von Gegefeld, who had a late breaker in Track A, the title of which was Preservation of a Subset of SIV-Specific CD4 Cells with Central Memory Markers Correlating to Control of Viremia in SIV MAC251 in Infected Macaques. If I can translate that into English, I think it means, since I'm a bit of a basic scientist myself, that if you have monkeys that get infected with this terribly virulent strain of simian immunodeficiency virus and they control their viremia, that relates to the fact that they have done an excellent job at maintaining a subset of CD4 cells that have the ability to recognize certain SIV antigens of relevance. But I'll leave it to Agneta to fill you in on the details.
Well, I don't know if it's going to be so many more details because I want to be brief. And as you know, natural infection of HIV and SIV. Can you hear me? No. Natural infection of HIV and SIV, they have different disease progression. Some develop AIDS faster than others. So, of course, the obvious question is, what is the difference? And in our lab, we have now a monkey model with rhesus macaques that we have infected with SIV. And there, we have seen that we have a similar picture. We have animals that control viremia, and we have animals that develop to progress to disease. So now we have the opportunity to look into what could be the difference. And of course, many here have presented a lot of correlates to disease progression. And what we did is we assume that the control for the disease is on the immunological basis. So we did analyze of the T cell subsets, and we found that we have central memory cells in the animal that controlled viremia. They have preserved central memory cells, but they're not just central memory cells, they also respond to SIV specific stimuli. So what we now want to do with this, to continue when we have found this correlate of these particular T cell subsets, that we would like to make a new study where we want to induce these particular cell T cell subsets and to see if these when we have induced these subsets of T cell, we want to challenge animals and to see if that can correlate to control of viremia. And that's it. Thank
questions.
You.
Questions for Anna. For Agneta. Anna for short. Yes.
Yeah. This is, we have implied that these could be the same thing in the HIV-infected tumors. So I don't think that this has been analyzed, but this is our suggestion.
Work this week in identifying the elite non-progressors, the elite controllers. Is it possible that this is one of the correlates they should look for?
Since I know they're probably, there is one of them. I don't think it's only one. I think there are many.
What was the root of infection?
It's a mucosal infection with SIV MAC251.
So these were females?
Yes, they were females.
So they were infected intravaginally?
Right.
I guess my question is, the basis upon which many have speculated that an effective control of SIV or HIV infection might be necessary is through maintaining a strong mucosal immune response. Can you comment on whether you think that there is mucosal T-cell immunity operative in your system?
That what you're saying, asking me, is that the route is important for the development of the immune response, and I believe that. I think it's important. And it's a different compared to if you do mucosal or IV challenge. You go different pathways for the immune responses.
And do you think that there is any practical way whereby we might augment the percentages of cells that can effect a direct antiviral response and participate in maintenance of control of viremia?
I don't know.
What about immunomodulatory approaches, such as the use of interleukins and interferons? There are, in fact, clinical studies that are ongoing. In France, as an example, that use IL-2 and IL-7 in the hope of specifically elevating specific populations of T cells.
We have a pilot study that where we have used DNA as a vaccine, and we have also introduced IL-15, and with this procedure we have we see that we have these particularly central memory cells with the SIV specific gag response, so we know we can induce these cells through immunization. So it's a matter of to continue with later with challenge to see if it correlates to control of viremia and disease progression.
So is there anything that you believe might lead us closer, as an example, to an HIV vaccine based on the work that you presented here today?
We hope so. Okay. Because this is the only correlate that we have found within this animal, because they have antibody response against SIV. They have cellular response, if we talk about ELISpot. But in terms of correlation between the progressor and non-progressor, this particular cell population is the only one that show a correlation between progressor and non-progressor.
Okay, any other questions for Agneta? If not, we'll move on to the introduction of Professor Jean-Paul Moati, who is from Marseille, France. He is the presenter of a late-breaker abstract in Track E, entitled Time is Costly, Modeling the Macroeconomic Impact of Scaling Up Access to Antiretroviral Treatment for HIV/AIDS in Sub-Saharan Africa. Jean-Paul, Est-ce que tu veux peut-être discuter un peu de tes travaux?
Yes, thank you, Mark. This work is supported by the French Agency for AIDS Research, and Mark, as everybody knows, is the chair of the scientific board of this agency, so I better be good because he evaluates us. Since a few years, there have been, well, many years, there have been various attempts to try to model the impact of the HIV epidemic on macroeconomic growth, of the general growth of affected countries. But until recently, these models were giving quite mixed results. They were basically saying, well, they're going to lose 1 point. The growth would be maybe 4% instead of 5%. So it's significant, but it's not such a big deal. Okay? Quite recently, there have been a change in this research in two directions, and the originality of our work, I think, is that we do both, which nobody did before. The first thing is that the previous model, they were taking into account only the short-term cost, the fact that when people are sick because of HIV, you have to spend money to treat them or to take care of them, and that they work less. They lose their, they're not able to work anymore. This is the indirect short-term cost. And we had in this conference a lot of evidence that putting people on IRT makes the workers able to go back to the normal level of productivity very quickly. But the previous models, they did not take into account, in fact, the most important aspects is what we call the long-term indirect costs. The impact of all that on human capital. The fact that inside the family you transmit knowledge and savoir-faire to the children, that you increase the education, and these are main factors for economic growth. We know that for a long time, and for development. So with techniques, I won't go into details. We are able in our model to better take that into account. The other thing is that until recently, there have been some other presentation in some pre-satellite symposium of that conference. Nobody simulated what happened, what would be the counter effect, the positive effect of scaling up access to treatment. And that's what we do. The results. We did this simulation based on data, epidemiologic and economic data in 6 African countries. In 2 of these countries, Angola and Benin, a good scaling up program can go as far as totally compensating the negative effects of the epidemic on economic growth. So it can put these economies back on their natural track, economic track of growth. For 3 other countries, which are Cameroon, Côte d'Ivoire, and Central African Republic, about 1/3 of the negative impact of the epidemic is compensated on growth thanks to the access to treatment. And if we make even more optimistic hypothesis about the decrease in prices of HIV, AIDS, medical and service goods to take care of people, they may be able to be as good as Benin and Angola. The bad news, but it's not a surprise, is that in some cases, like Zimbabwe, even if you do, and you know the tragic situation of that country from an economic point of view, even if you do a good scaling up program, the impact on growth and compensating the effect of the epidemic will not be very significant. So that's the first result. The second result is for at least 4 of these countries, that is with the exception of Zimbabwe and Central African Republic, in 2010, this scaling up program could become cost beneficial at the macro level. That means that they will give to the economy more added value than they cost. So it's very important. And finally, the last message is, as the case of Zimbabwe, unfortunately, and the differences also in the country tells us, is that the time, one of the factors that explains the differences of a country, is not only the prevalence of the economic basic trends, but it's also the time when you start the response. So I didn't know that time to deliver was the anthem of the conference when we started this work, but it's especially appropriate even for macroeconomic impact of scaling up access to treatment.
Thank you, Jean-Paul. Are there questions for Professor Moati? Yes. Wait for the microphone, please.
Thanks. Sally Holston from Planet Wire. Did you actually put into dollar terms some of these kinds of figures that you were doing in your modeling?
Yes, we have. You have it in the. You have it in the. I guess in the. Abstract, so you can look at it. Of course, to be clear, this is not an evaluation of a real scaling up access program. There is an implicit assumption is that the program are efficiently run and to some extent optimal. We're not saying that it's going to be like this in the real world in 2010. But if we do our work properly, that may be the case.
Jean-Paul, you alluded to Zimbabwe as a country that is undergoing a transition, I guess, to the worse in terms of its stability and has been for some time. Are you suggesting then that the benefits of providing ARVs rapidly to a country like Zimbabwe may not have long-term merit, that we should not be providing ARVs to such places? I just want you to clarify, because I don't think that's what you meant to say.
What is unfortunate is that theoretically, with these endogenous graft models we are using, we can more or less predict what we call an epidemiologic trap. That is, a level of the epidemic and of its impact on the basics of the economy, which is due to the context, so that it really takes the economy in a vicious circle of underdevelopment, okay? Some by reference to what we call a poverty trap, in some the fact that at some point some people who are underskilled, under welfare, well, they are taken into a vicious circle, and sometimes even Social Security makes it worse rather than good. And unfortunately, it seems that when we did that, we thought that we will not find any country, we hope not to find any country which will fit with that catastrophic scenario. Unfortunately, in our simulation, and frankly, I hope I'm wrong, but Zimbabwe is unfortunately in that situation. So that means that at some point, it may be too late. So time to deliver is perfectly important.
But there are still individuals, obviously, in Zimbabwe who can access ARVs and who are doing well as a consequence of getting those ARVs. Yes.
But what I'm just saying is that the impact of economic growth of that will be a lot limited. But of course, that doesn't mean that we should not give intratoral treatment to Zimbabwe people, of course.
I still don't get why it doesn't work in Zimbabwe. It's too far gone.
Yeah, it's a combination of three factors are explaining the differences between countries. One is the prevalence. The other is more or less related to AIDS, but only indirectly and marginally. That is the basics of the economic dynamic of a country, which is very bad. It will be very bad even in the absence of AIDS. Okay? And the third one is the time when you start the antiretroviral treatment. The scaling up, the massive scaling up of antiretroviral treatment. Is it more clear?
Is there a question back here?
Thank you. Mr. Mati, what are your assumptions in terms of resources? I mean, external resources from donors, from various international institutions and so on, and proper national resources. What are your assumptions?
The way we introduce the scaling up in the model, like in other works on that, is by making assumption about a decrease in price of the goods that are necessary to take care of the people. And then because you have elasticity of demand to price, if you lower the price, the demand increases. So we don't need to be very specific about that. This decrease in price can come from the fact that the price effectively decreases, as it has been the case for IRVs to some extent. And of course, international subsidies is a way to decrease price for the government and the household. So that's the way it's taken into account. But that's one of the problems I think that we will have to face in terms of macroeconomic constraints, is that at least in Africa, today, more than half of the AIDS expenditures are coming from outside donors. So it's good because it's international solidarity, but even when you're not a very, well, even if you're not a very neoliberal and market-oriented economist, which is my case, that can create problems at macroeconomic level, because when an economy is too much dependent on external aid, that creates problems. So, yes. Did I answer to your question?
So,
sorry. Half of the spendings you refer to health spendings or
yes. Healthcare, all healthcare, it's healthcare spending, but all types, not only IRBs.
Like Liberia or countries like that, like Liberia or like
we did the simulation. Effectively, was on the 6 countries. I would say we didn't do it because we did not have sufficient data on others. But
Steve Smith with the Boston Globe. So modeling is great to do. What's the practical implication of this? What's the message?
Well, the practical implication is that it's to give to some extent, but I think other people have to do that, not me. But I think it gives a lot of we have a lot of micro argument in that conference that it's worth investing in the massive response. And it's very important to do it as soon as possible. That's why we said time is costly. And what we adding to that to some extent is that also at the macro level, at the level of a global economic policy of a country, this is very important. So I think that maybe it could help some friends in this conference to, let's say, convince their Minister of Finance that it's worth doing this kind of things.
In other words, if I can just give my 2 cents, it is worthwhile for countries in the West to invest in ARVs in developing countries for a variety of reasons, including the fact that the economic, the potential for economic devastation in rural Africa may be so great that we will do our own economies long-term harm by not helping sooner, because of the back and flow trade that should be maintained, and it is in our long-term best interests to keep those regions economically viable. And of course, one adds into that the arguments that antiretrovirals in developing countries make sense in the short term, because we will do individuals and families so much good, as well as the public health arguments that lowering viral loads across the board will result in people who get ARVs less infectious for others. It seems that there are really a lot of good reasons to move forward with scaled up access of antiretrovirals, and no reasons whatsoever that any of us can really articulate against doing this on a very expeditious basis. Okay, I think if there are no further questions, we'll thank the audience that is here and for coming and for your kind attention, and we also thank both Drs. Van Gegerfeld and Moati for their excellent research that we have now had the opportunity to hear presented. Thank you to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks.